Welcome to Beyond the Boards, your go-to podcast for all things related to the exciting world of digital out-of-home advertising. I'm your host, Patrick Brennan, here to take you behind the screens and into the inner workings of our fascinating industry. On each episode, we'll hear from the visionaries, creators, and analysts driving this fast-paced industry forward. We'll talk about emerging technologies, creative campaigns, as well as strategy, measurement, and insights. The goal is both to entertain and educate anyone who shares a passion for digital out-of-home advertising. So sit back, relax, and get ready to go beyond the boards. Welcome back, everyone, to the Beyond the Boards podcast. Today, I am ecstatic to have on a very, very special guest, Haley Burke. Haley is our marketing manager at Encompass TV. She is also the executive producer and editor of the Beyond the Boards podcast that you're currently listening to. And I want to discuss building a brand, and I could not think of a better person to have on than Haley. So Haley, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the podcast.
Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to be on the other side of this. I'm excited for our conversation.
Me too. We were just joking before we hit record about having to listen to our own voices, you know, when you record something like this. And that is definitely the worst part. But obviously, Haley does an amazing job of cleaning it all up and making me and us sound a lot better. So thank you for all that you do, Haley. And just to kick things off, let's kind of start with the basics of branding, if you will, kind of like an intro to branding. In your own words, you know, what a brand is and what it encompasses.
Yeah. So a brand is really an experience. So it's, you know, a lot of people think of a brand as just colors or, you know, even words that describe what your brand is and the visual identity of your brand. But the reality is that brand is so much more than that. It's that feeling that people get when they walk into your store or see your commercial or, you know, engage with you online on a digital platform or in real life, right? So whenever we think about what a brand is, it's not just, you know, the golden arches and the red lettering that describes McDonald's, right? A brand is also how you're greeted at the door. It's also the taste of the French fries that you're getting, right? The visual emotional component that guides the experience of your brand market.
Very well said. And kind of to your point there, you mentioned like McDonald's, right? And when I think of branding, I start to think of all these huge companies. Why would you say branding is important for businesses on the small to medium size level as much as it is the bigger ones, in your own opinion?
Yeah. Again, it goes back to that being an experience. When you're a small to medium-sized business, right, it's even more important for you to claim and take up the space because you are competing against larger, more well-established brands. The thing about a brand is that it builds trust within your community, right? A brand is the reason that you buy Benadryl versus off-brand Benadryl, right? Even if you do buy the off-brand Benadryl, you probably have a moment of pause as you're, you know, in Target looking for, you know, what should I purchase, right? It's that immediate trust and connection. So when we tie that back to small to medium-sized businesses, your brand is the way that you're building and creating that trust that makes you the first choice over a larger brand, right? It's the reason that you can convey to a consumer, no, I'm worth your trust and I'm worth, you know, you spending money on me because I can provide a high quality product. So I would say that brand is almost even more important for small and medium sized businesses than it is for large businesses, right? Even those large corporations, they started as a small business, but the thing that catapulted them to be the billion-dollar companies that we see now, you know, Starbucks, Coca-Cola, McDonald's, as we've already mentioned, is their ability to really carve out their place in their niche as a trusted source of information or product.
That's so true. That is so true. And it is funny that you say that, you know, when we see these big businesses, we just think like, oh, they're here. Like, oh, that, you know, they exist and they have this great brand, but they had to build that at some point. Right. And it's, so that's something really interesting to think about there. And to your point about, you know, even with Benadryl, right, name brand versus off brand, something that I've heard a lot of stories of, as I'm sure you have as well as people listening, is there are a lot of companies out there that literally will halt production on the line and swap out labels. So I know like milk was one I've heard stories of where they would come in and they print all the labels for the name brand milk, halt the line, and then go swap out the labels for the off brand, you know, Walmart version, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. The same exact product they just change out the labels and yet still selling. So it just shows you how strong just a literal logo is, or color, or all the things combined that make up whatever that is, that feeling that you get with that brand. I just always thought that's really fascinating.
That's such a great point, is like when you think about brands, if we can even go like high ticket brands too, right? Like Gucci or Louis Vuitton, right? They are creating these really beautiful personas, but that's what you're paying for. You're paying for the identity that comes with Gucci. That bag that Gucci is producing, you can buy that bag for $250 on any other resale site, just unbranded. And there's so many of these websites out there, right? At Gucci, don't come for me. But like, the reality is that you're paying for the label, you're paying for the identity of Gucci. And that says a lot about brand recognition and the value of brand and how much stock people put in it. Because, you know, when you think about, you know, culture as a whole, one of the big tenets of what creates our culture is your social status. And so brand is just a metric of social status within the business community.
Certainly. And now that we've established, you know, kind of a ground floor of why branding is important and what that really means, let's talk a little bit about building a brand, right? So obviously that's a complex process. It's not as, in my opinion, as simple as going 1, 2, 3, okay, you're good, let's go. It's like you said, makes up a lot. It's emotions, feelings, identity, and things like that. So if you don't mind laying out a little bit of how do you even go about creating a unique brand identity? Where do you start?
Yeah, that's a great question. And with a lot of our dealers who are building their own brands within their community, that's one that they often bring to us.
So that is a great start for really laying the foundation for identifying what a brand is and why it's so important. Obviously, building a brand is a very complex process. It's not as simple as 1, 2, 3, at least from my perspective. But let's dive in a little bit to what it takes to truly create and build a strong brand from the ground up. So just to start, in your opinion, Haley, how do you go about creating a unique brand identity?
Yeah, absolutely. So a unique brand identity is created from asking three key questions, right? So that's answering the what, the why, and how. And by answering those three questions, that'll give you the guidelines to start building the experience that is your company, your product, your business. So start with the what, right? So what is it that you are doing? What problem are you solving? What issue is it that you're solving for the consumer or for your target audience, right? And then why are you solving this issue? This is really where your purpose comes in, right? So I was in the field with our director of Denver sales, Mark Muma, last week, and we were talking to a client who had a business. It was essentially like a sober space for people to still come and be social. And so that was his purpose. His purpose, his why, was community. He wanted to create community that was authentic, where people could come and not feel the pressure to, you know, have to perform or be someone else. A lot of those things that come along with, you know, being in a bar setting, right? So that was his goal. That was his why. The why is really kind of that altruism that makes you stand apart or gives you a reason for being. In today's consumer economy, your why is so important. Never has the consumer been so concerned with the intention behind a company. So don't gloss over your why, especially as you begin to build your brand. So we have the what, the why, and then we have the how. How are you doing it in line with your why, right? The how kind of ties the what and the why together. It's the bridge. How are we doing it? And how does that relate or impact you, the consumer? So those are kind of the three key tenets that it's most important to think of whenever you're considering, you know, your brand. You'll also find that as you distill those down, and really when I say distill them down, I mean, when you're thinking about this, I would highly encourage you to get those what, why, and how statements down to, you know, a sentence or maybe two sentences, right? We're keeping them short, concise, to the point, in a way being broad enough to encompass or foresee your growth, but not so broad that you lose sight of the true reason that you've started your business or your company, right? It should be scalable for you, as well as not losing sight of what makes you you and unique as a business.
That was a fantastic answer. And you're right about today's consumers, especially, you know, they really want to be able to connect with the brand on all these different levels. What does that brand stand for? I know even myself personally, when I'm making a decision of, should I use this company or that one? There's a lot more in it than just, oh, okay, here's the price of the product. Oh, okay, this is the closest business to me. You know, it's a much deeper decision than that. And I think that's the way that the landscape has changed the most in terms of business over the last few decades is, you know, you don't just have one roofing company in your town. You may have 50, you may have more, you may have hundreds. And you have to be able to stand out as one of those roofing companies to really connect with your audience. And I think that's important. So how do you do that? If you're a business, how do you identify and truly understand your specific target audience?
That's a great question. For new business owners who are maybe just starting out, the most important thing for you to be able to do is to kind of put yourself in that customer's shoes. There are a couple questions that you can begin to think about whenever you are starting to consider who your target audience is and how it's going to be most effective to reach them, right? So those questions that brands should be asking themselves are, what are my customers' motivators, right? What motivates them, not only, you know, just to make a purchase, but also what is motivating them in their day-to-day life, right? Because that's going to tell you a lot about the target audience that you're reaching, right? For Nike, the motivation for their clients is that their clients want to just do it. Their target audience is ambitious. They are, you know, high achieving, high performing. Those are the motivators of the people they want to reach, right? So that's going to inform all of their messaging because that's the target audience that they want to reach. And then we can think about pain points, right? What are the biggest hurdles that they have to overcome? Or what are the problems that they have that they're looking for a solution for, right? A great brand is able to get ahead of those pain points. They know their client's pain points before their client even knows their pain points, right? If we think about this in the context of, let's say, venue partners, right? A lot of our dealers are searching for ways to better talk to venue partners or bring on venue partners faster. Well, before you can bring on a venue partner, in order to have an effective sales pitch, you have to understand what their pain points are, what their problems are, right? For a lot of venue partners, they may have a lack of funding, and so they can't afford, you know, robust marketing solutions. Well, as an Encompass dealer, you are offering a solution to that pain point. You know, another pain point for venue partners oftentimes is that they feel overwhelmed by the thought of marketing, right? Because marketing is such a lofty concept. So one of the things that you can do as a dealer is you can simplify that, make it not feel overwhelming. And then what are their roadblocks? What is preventing them from potentially engaging in a solution? And then what is their wish list, right? What do they truly want? If this was an ideal world and they could have everything they want, right? What would be on their wish list? Do they want exclusivity, right? They want to be the only realtor on the indoor digital billboard. Do they want to see their return on investment? Odds are yes. Those are wish list things, right? They want to be able to know that what you're offering them as a venue partner is working and that they are building themselves up in the community the way they want to be built up, right? So think about those things, right? What motivates your client? What is causing them friction in achieving their goals? What are those roadblocks? And then if they could solve that problem, how would they solve it ideally? And what would they get from solving that problem, right? And then I think another really important part of understanding your market and how your brand fits in is also doing a deep competitor analysis, right? You want to look at what they're doing great. You want to look at what they're doing well. What do you really like about them? What's something that you could mimic or you wish that you could mimic? You know, I, you know, want to make French fries like McDonald's makes French fries, right? That's something that can be really helpful to guiding you to understanding, you know, what are the standards in my industry? And then at the same time, you also want to look at what are they not doing well? Because the thing that's going to make you unique is how you fill in that white space where your competition is maybe not meeting the needs or addressing the pain points of your client in the most productive way, right? That's kind of where pain points and wish lists come in and share a space, right? What is it that makes you unique versus your competitors? So understanding your target audience is going to be really helpful and indicative of, you know, how you can be successful within your business, right?
But that makes perfect sense. You're basically reverse engineering, you know, what is the end user's response or going perceived response or whatever it may be of my messaging, of my brand, instead of just looking inward and saying, well, I think this is really cool and neat and everyone else better too. You know, that's how most people do it, as much as, you know, we can even kind of joke about it. That's how a lot of people do it. They make up their own brand. They're like, oh, this means this to me. And it's these words because this was, you know, whatever in my childhood. And it's like, well, no one gets that. No one's going to understand that. Maybe you can still get this brand, but you're just kind of making it up, this up as you go. So that makes sense to basically reverse engineering your way to what you're going to do. So let's talk a little bit about some of those elements that you were just speaking on, right? Like brand voice and identity and things like that. Obviously, they contribute to a very strong and memorable brand if you do them correctly. How significant would you say are like the name and the logo in the overall branding strategy?
Yeah, they're really important. Those things tie into or should reflect exactly what your goal is, but also the goal of your consumers, right? So when it kind of ties into that last question too, of like, your brand should address the needs, the motivations, the pain points, and the roadblocks of your customer, while also telling them, you know, I'm the solution. So the way that your brand and your colors all works together should convey that. And you can talk a lot about color theory too, right? When you think of Salesforce has blue coloring, right? Blue is trustworthy. It's professional. You can see that same brand coloring in LinkedIn, right? It's not a coincidence that they are a similar color blue versus if we look at, other brands like, but if you think of Pepto-Bismol, right? It pops. It's the thing that you think of when you think of tummy aches, but it attracts, you know, kids. That's who their kind of target market is parents whose kids are having a tummy ache, right? It's that fun playfulness. It's almost like enticing you, right? It's like tummy aches aren't bad. Tummy aches are fun when they taste like bubblegum. That's kind of an atrocious example too, but you can even look at our branding as well, the green and the blue, right? At this point in time, you know, they convey that kind of playfulness that you often want in a marketing company, right? That youth. You can also look at, you know, Godiva. Godiva is gold and blue, and that really conveys, you know, more elevated, elegant, experience that Godiva wants to bring about. You might look at McDonald's or Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola is a great one for color theory, right? Because Coca-Cola is bold. It's red. Red catches your eye. There's a reason that McDonald's, Coca-Cola, they're red, and there's a reason that they're big. They have a big presence. It's because part of it is that they use that same coloring, right? Look at In-N-Out Burger. There's a reason that In-N-Out Burger is red and yellow. It's because those two colors catch your eyes. They drive emotion that's associated, honestly, in a lot of the American consumer's brain with, quality and, you know, everything that McDonald's has stood for in the past. I don't know if that was like the best example, but we'll go with it. I'll edit it later.
I think that's a great example. And Haley, you're honestly bringing, this is why I wanted to have you on. I mean, this is your wheelhouse. You're constantly talking about this kind of stuff and goes way over my head 90% of the time. But just thinking about Coca-Cola as an example, right? For me personally, and this is a personal thing, but it just shows you how powerful a brand is. I don't even drink soda these days. And when I see a can of Coca-Cola, I get literally like all these flashbacks when I was a child and my grandfather was always drinking Coca-Cola in the red cans and just, you know, hanging out with him and talking to him and things like that. So I literally feel like nostalgia and like positive emotion just from seeing a can of soda, which is crazy when you really think about it, but it just shows you how powerful those things are. And you even mentioned in Pepto-Bismol, I remember you may be able to relate to this, Haley, but Flintstones vitamins as a kid.
Yes.
Zero part of me wanted to have vitamins. Zero part of me wanted to have vitamins as a kid. I promise you that. But as soon as they became the Flintstones characters, I was all in. I was taking those vitamins every single day. I was excited for that. And it's just interesting to know how those types of brands and can really speak to you at all ages, not even just as a child, but really throughout your life. So very well said there. And something else I was thinking about was like Amazon. You know, and when they started out as this book company online, you know, the online book company, even Netflix. Netflix started out as sending DVDs and now it's all streaming and all that. But obviously some of these really successful brands are not only able to build the brand, they're able to have it evolve almost organically over time. So I wanted to talk about that just a little bit with you, if you don't mind. So obviously you need to have consistency in your brand. You can't just, it can't be something new every day or else no one will know what it is. But at the same time, you need to have that flexibility to evolve over time and kind of rebrand, if you will. So this will be a little bit of a loaded question. So I apologize in advance, but how can a brand evolve while still staying true to its core values? And when and why should a company consider rebranding, if at all?
Yeah, loaded question, well stated. So I think to answer that first part of your question is of, you know, how does a brand grow and stay true to themselves? It goes back to that how, what, and why of your brand, right? So everything that you do, every choice that you make, from who you're hiring to what you're writing on your deliverables, should go back to those three core questions: what, why, and how. The reason that you have those, they're essentially the three pillars that are going to hold up your brand. They should be broad enough to remind you of who you are at your core while allowing you to grow as a business. A great brand is one that is not limited, but rather empowered by the structure that they've put in place, right? It's kind of like, I think the best analogy that I can use is like having a budget, right? A budget shouldn't, like a financial budget, it shouldn't be restrictive. It should allow you to enjoy your pina colada on the beach without fear of going into debt for that pina colada, right? It gives you the ability to achieve all of the goals that you want to achieve without putting yourself in a position that could endanger your business or your company or undermine the trust that the people who hold mind shares of your company have in you, right? So your what, why, and how are going to be the things that catapult you to making the decisions that allow you to grow in a way that remains honest to who you are and who your customers see you as. And then to answer the second part of that question, when should a company rebrand? That is also a loaded question because rebranding should be taken very seriously, right? If you're rebranding, you are quite possibly starting over, right? It's going to be a rupture or a break. So whenever you rebrand, you need to carefully consider, you know, what is the stock that I already have? But also, you know, is it worth leaving behind that stock or that trust that I have built up in order to, you know, potentially achieve or reorient back to who I was, right? So I think when considering, you know, should I rebrand? You have to consider what is the foundation that I would be tearing up as I choose to rebrand. Now, with that being said, I don't want to insinuate that rebranding means that you lose your entire customer base, right? That's not the truth. Rebranding can oftentimes be a really good thing, but you have to understand that if you are going to rebrand, you may lose a little bit of customer base. You may lose a little bit of trust, but if the potential gain is worth more than the potential loss, then I would say, it may be a better choice, right? If you have never had a strong foundational brand, then maybe rebranding could be an opportunity for you to, you know, completely change that narrative and get back in touch with the original reason that your company started or was created, right? So there's a lot of factors to consider when it comes to rebranding.
Yeah, that's very well said. And yeah, that's definitely not a black and white thing, right? Like, oh, okay, I should rebrand or I shouldn't rebrand, right? You're right. There's so much of a gray area there, like what's going on. And great answers to both of the parts of the fully loaded questions. And the most important thing I think you said is that, you know, if you want to have a pina colada, go for it, right? I love your Jimmy Buffett methodology there. And that was the most important part I took from that. So well said, Haley.
Jimmy Buffett is very important. We can't forget to keep him as our North Star.
Yeah, but in all seriousness, really, really great answer. And I can think of so many different, you know, decisions that people had to make, whether it be rebranding or keeping their brand or keep evolving. The most interesting was Twitter, I think, being X now. And, you know, there's, if you ask 10 people, you'll get 10 different answers on their opinions on that. I'm not asking that, but I just find that in particular, that one and some of the others along those same lines would be pretty fascinating, especially after you build a brand like that. But
yeah, no, absolutely. Twitter is definitely an interesting use case for how rebranding can significantly impact and undermine trust that a business has in your platform. I know Twitter has lost a lot of users from their rebrand.
And, you know, there's only so many things out there where you use that product or service as a, basically as a verb. And, you know, like, I'm going to Google something. It would, if Google said they're changing their name, we'd be like, are you out of your mind? That's insane. Right. And that's, to me, kind of how Twitter was. It's like, you know, you always hear people, I'm going to tweet that, or they tweeted this. And it's literally being used as a verb. And it's crazy to me that you would change the branding on something like that. But, you know, maybe maybe people start saying, I just X that or something. I don't know. But
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what the thinking was there. I would be so curious to have been in that rebranding conversation, because I'm sure it was really interesting, right? And but they're like an example of a bad rebrand versus like Lululemon. You didn't know who Lululemon was before they rebranded, right? They Lululemon existed for several years before they were Lululemon, and then they rebranded and then they got big. So like it could go one of two ways, but like X is a bad example. Lululemon's a great example.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would have no idea who Lululemon is if Mark Muma didn't work with us. So now I'm very aware, and they need to put him on the payroll. Just say that, because you would think he's getting commission of some sort, but yeah,
honestly, he probably should be getting commission. I am sure he has at least a couple shares of that company in terms of shorts.
He certainly should. So obviously, you know, I'm going to play a little bit. I'm going to play stupid here. So in this digital age, obviously, I'm saying I'm playing stupid because obviously we live in this every single day and this is all we're ever talking about. But let's say I'm a business, a small to medium-sized business, and I've started to build this brand up. You know, maybe I'm in early stages, maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm in late stages and I've had an effective brand, but I'm not really seeing the success that I used to, or maybe I'm a new brand that wants to continue to build. How crucial is digital presence for brands in this day and age? And what should they really do to build the brand online? Should it be social media? Should it be, I don't know, websites? What do you think?
Oh, this is a great question. First of all, how crucial is an online digital presence? I would say that it's essential. If you're not online, you don't exist. Sorry to say that, but it's just the truth. I believe the statistic is 97% of consumers read reviews. If you are not online, consumers are not seeing you. So with that being said, there's a few stages of marketing when it comes to strategy and how you can build that presence. But first and foremost, you have to start with the foundation. And, you know, I love that you bring up this question, because it has been a really huge conversation in and around our office too, of just, you know, how do we provide better for business owners in terms of education? So you have to start with a foundation when it comes to building an online presence. That foundation starts with your website. If you don't have a website, you're not online, you're not findable. You have to have a website. A Facebook page is not a website. You need a website. It doesn't have to be anything crazy. It doesn't have to be 100 pages that are, you know, perfectly SEO optimized. SEO is a whole other conversation that we can have, but you do need to have some form of a website. Websites build trust. They're essentially the digital storefront that people are able to walk into, right? And then next most important is going to be Google Business Profile. Google is one of the largest search engines in the world. Google owns YouTube as well. So this is going to be essential for you to have in terms of it being the open sign on your business's website, right? Again, it's another place where reviews get posted. So you're building that social trust. You're basically saying, yes, we're here, we're open, we're up to date. And, you know, you should come in. It's that invitation to come in. And then we have social media as well for it. Social media offers you a incredible way to engage really meaningfully with your existing audience that's online. There are very few other places on digital platforms where you can have a genuine conversation with someone, right? You know, DMs and comments are not only a great way to interact with your existing customer base, they also show a potential customer, hey, I'm active, I care about my customers, which again goes back to that idea that the consumer now is more savvy and discerning than ever. They're looking for a reason to trust you. So you have to give them that reason. So, you know, those foundational products, website, Google Business Profile, social media, those are essential for your digital online presence. Once you have those, you can start to move into the lead generating digital platforms and such as pay-per-click or social media advertising. And then you can move into brand awareness, which looks like pre-roll ads, which are going to be videos that run before videos online, right? They're going to be non-skippable. You can move into geofencing. You can move into, you know, OTT or CTV. Those products are better for brand awareness. But if you don't have the foundational elements or the lead generation elements, they're not going to be successful in giving you the leads that you're looking for and giving you the return that you're looking for. So, you know, to answer that first question, having an online presence is essential.
Yeah, great thoughts again. There's just so much that I feel like you've shared that have been very influential in terms of learning about how to build a brand. So I appreciate that. And I think a lot of small businesses, especially medium-sized businesses, can take a lot from this. So thank you for that and all of your expertise, Haley. Before we wrap everything up, though, do you have any final thoughts or key takeaways that you'd like our listeners or even, you know, small businesses or entrepreneurs to know before we conclude?
Yeah, be intentional. You really can't be too intentional with how you position your brand, and then stay true to your brand, right? Once you've determined the why, what, and the how, let that guide you through literally every single decision. You should be asking yourself, is this true to who our brand is? Will this resonate with our customers? And that's really the thing that helps you to build a strong brand. Also, you know, don't be afraid to be bold, right? In terms of your branding. Obviously, know what's going to resonate with your customer, right? If you're not Harley Davidson, don't be Harley Davidson. But, you know, don't be afraid to let your strong brand guidelines do exactly that, which is guide you.
Very well said. Don't be afraid. I think that's fantastic advice. And that's something I've seen a lot of smaller business owners not really follow, that they are afraid. They stay in a little bubble and they're like, I've even heard business owners say, well, I don't have a fit on TikTok or whatever, maybe just as an example. And I immediately think, like, you don't know that. You very well may. I see your audience on TikTok, so you should be on there doing something, or Facebook or Google or having a website. And they convince themselves, like, nope, I'm right and I know where my audience is. But, you know, try that.
No, yeah. No. I mean, that's such a good point. It's like, I feel like we've both worked in the client sphere for a while, and it's easy. Like, I oftentimes, and I'm sure you experience the same thing being on the sales side of things, people get really intimidated, and intimidation is not a bad thing. Be challenged. Don't be afraid to challenge yourself or to be challenged by your market or to be challenged by learning a new thing.
Absolutely. Well, what's the point? What's the point if you don't take some swings, right? Awesome. Well, Haley, this has been phenomenal. It's been a lot of fun, to be honest with you. So thank you everyone for listening. If you have any additional questions or topics you'd like us to cover, please reach out to us directly. Until next time, keep building those strong, memorable brands. And thank you so much again, Haley, for your time.
Of course. Thank you, Patrick, for having me on.
Anytime. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Beyond the Boards. I hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is hosted by myself and produced alongside Haley Burt. The music is composed by Rocka Jr. Be sure to like and subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. And please leave us a review if you like what you hear. On behalf of our entire Beyond the Boards team, thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next time as we continue to explore the fascinating world of digital out-of-home advertising.